Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's January 20, 2014, and this is episode 405. This week, I'm really, really pleased to be joined for a second time by Andrew S. Gibson from Wellington, New Zealand. Andrew is a professional photography writer, and we're going to be talking today about his new Craft and Vision book, The Natural Portrait, which I've just looked through and find absolutely beautiful. So welcome to the show today, Andrew.
Thanks, Martin. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's really, really good to have you here. So, you know, this is a Craft and Vision big book, and although, you know, we'll put some information about, you know, what we talk about in the blog post. So, you know, people can go over to mbp.ac/405 to check out some details about, you know, what we've talked about. But of course, you know, the book is available on Craft and Vision, and I do recommend that people get a copy, because it's, especially obviously if you're into portraits, or you want to be, it's a must. So what we're going to do today is go through and discuss the book, and you know, how it came about, and you know, maybe get a few tips from you as well. So first, Andrew, could you just give us a bit of a rundown about what the book is all about?
Yes, well, it's very much about what the title says, natural portraits. So it's taking portraits in natural light, using very little equipment. Most of the photos in the book weren't even taken with reflectors. And the whole idea being to put together a guide that kind of takes away the more intimidating aspects of portrait photography, which I'm think mainly come from setting up flash units and using modifiers and getting that auto balance with ambient light and something like that. So if you strip it back to using just natural light, it really removes a lot of obstacles so that you can just get right in there and start taking portraits.
Well, from the results, obviously, I know that you shot a lot of these images as you wrote the book, but
yes,
and I think that adds to the overall book. It's as though we feel as though we're learning with you, but the results are absolutely stunning. You know, you can tell that they're natural light, but they're so well produced that you could also you'd be forgiven for thinking that they were lit by, you know, other means as well. You're definitely achieving the look, and the methods that you're using are you know, obviously working. So I think it's going to be one of those, a great book. I mean, you know, because you've as you say, there's a lot of books about off-camera flash and you know all of this, and although that's great, you know, people, you can have a lot of fun with off-camera flash, and I'm not saying that, and I know that you're not saying that that's a bad thing, but I just think that the results are so good that it will hopefully open people's eyes up to the fact that you don't necessarily need to do that for it when you want to go out and shoot portraits.
That's right. I've been thinking about this, you know, over the last few days as well, since the book came out, and I think I've realized what it is. I mean, we all know, we're probably all familiar with people like David Hobby and Joe McNally, because they are very, very good at using portable flash to light their photos, and so a lot of other photographers. But that's also very complicated, I know, because I've tried it myself, even with one flash unit. There's a lot to think about. And so I think what it is that when you use natural light, it helps because it's kind of training your eye to observe the light and see what's happening. But also it's keeping the process as simple as possible so you can concentrate on building a good rapport with the model and communicating with your model. And these are the things that make good portraits. I mean, these are the most important skills. When you get good at that, and once you've mastered natural light, then perhaps then that's when you can start thinking about adding a flash unit and seeing what you can do with that.
That's a very good point. And as you said that, I started to think, you know, the majority of people that are going to be picking up this book are probably going to be people that will be out there with a model or a family member that will be modeling for them. and generally be alone with that person. And the big difference that I literally just started thinking about is, you know, you mentioned building a rapport with the model. When Joe McNally is out there with his models, he's got a team of people doing all of the other stuff. I mean, he's the obviously the director. He's the person that is he understands how much power he wants each flash unit to push out, and you know he does all of that. He knows all of that. But the fact that he's working with a team of other assistants frees him to work directly with the model and continue to build that rapport. So you're kind of removing the part that we can't have by doing it naturally anyway.
Yes, I never thought of that, actually. I mean, you're right. Whenever I've seen pictures of his on, you know, on the internet, he's always got a team of people around him.
Mm.
And also, I mean, he's been doing this for decades, so yeah, he knows how to set those lights up very quickly. But also, I mean, I can only guess because I've never had my photo taken by him, but I guess he is very, very good at putting people at ease and gaining their trust, and doing that all within a very short space of time, because sometimes these guys only have a few minutes to take somebody's photo.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I actually, when I was in New York for the photo shelter Luminance 2012, it will have been, I actually, on the first day, I went to one of his, just an hour or so, but it was one of Joe McNally's workshops. And he did. I mean, he's got his a couple of guys that that will, you know, they go and make sure that the lights are all pointing in the right direction under Joe's instructions, of course.
Yes.
But what's happening is he's talking all the time, and he's not only talking to, you know, he's so good at this. He's not only talking to the model, but he's talking to the people in the workshop as well, explaining what's happening. But you're right. I mean, he's been doing it for decades, and he's one of the masters. And I think that the point is, and why your book is going to be so useful, is because exactly as you just said, removing those technical aspects, especially for someone that's really just getting started in this, is a big thing. And I think that, you know, I mean, I've only just realized that as you made that statement. So, you know, I think the conversation's going to go well here today.
Yes, I mean, the model I took the most photos in the book, her name is Wimmy.
Mm.
She told me a story once. She had some photos taken by a local photographer. The first lot of photos came out quite nice, and they were taken inside in a studio.
Mm.
But the second lot, they went outside somewhere, and he was taking so much time to set up his flash units and try and get them balanced with the light and figure out what he was doing, that they didn't end up with many good photos, or photos that she was happy with anyway, because the shoot kind of lost its rhythm, and well, she said it never really got going, and it was all very hard because he was concentrating so much on getting those lights set up that he wasn't able to concentrate on the actual portrait taking itself.
Yeah, it's a very important aspect, and so, you know, if he had got a lot of the other basics down first, he probably was using her as practice, and that's probably fine. But, you know, I totally understand what you're saying. It's those sort of things, you need to get that all ironed out before you start to interact with a model, because, you know, her time is important. And I think it's insulting to waste someone's time to that extent. So, yeah, it's all good stuff.
Mm. I mean, they are people just like us. And, I mean, like all of the people that I've taken photos of for this book, none of them are professional models. Wimmy has done some modeling professionally in the past, but she doesn't do it now.
Mm.
And so, yeah, they are not being paid. So, I mean, it's probably a different relationship if they're being paid, because they will put up with some of this stuff.
Yeah.
But people that aren't being paid, they're doing it because they would like to get some good photos out of it. They want to enjoy the experience. And I think that comes when you spend a lot of time talking to them, asking them about their life, and taking a genuine interest in the people that they are.
Mm.
And the less things you have occupying your mind with regards to lighting and all the other aspects of the shoot, the easier it is for you to do that.
Mm. Well, as an extension of that, I mean, a lot of the time, I know that a lot of our listeners are doing portraits as a side job. And, you know, I know that there are some that are doing it professionally as well, but the point I was going to make here is that if you know, we're talking at the moment of the, you know, you interact with a model, you get a model on the set, and you know, whether it's a Model Mayhem model that we'll talk about later, or whether it's a friend or family, you know, that if you are both looking to improve your portfolio and put photographs in the model's hand at the end of the day, then there is a mutual benefit there. But a lot of the people that are listening to this doing portraiture are actually doing it for pay. And so if that's the case, it, you know, it actually flips it totally over the other way. If you turn up and you're actually taking money from someone to make their portrait, then you've got to be like snap, snap, snap. It's, you can't be messing around with your lighting and all of that. So again, all of this is going to help people to get the basics and more down before they start to get in and start to do the lighting stuff. And then they can go and buy Joe McNally's books and get that part down, you know. So you, it's, it all sounds like it's something that will build on the next phase, and it may not even have to be the next phase, because I personally love shooting in natural light as well. I use studio lights. I've got a whole studio setup that I will use on set when necessary. I don't do that work often, but you know, it, I also like to do natural light work. So I think that this is all very important stuff that we're touching on here, and hopefully will be useful for the listeners.
Yes, I like your point about confidence as well, because if you're not confident, and I've had this happen to me as I'm going along the learning curve, then that uncertainty can transmit itself to the model, especially if they are not very confident in themselves as well, because it may be the first time they've done it, or they're not used to, you know, posing for the camera.
Yeah.
So if you are, on the other hand, if you are very confident and you know exactly what you're doing and you make strong decisions and you're not afraid to say, hang on, this isn't working, let's do it like this, all of this transmits confidence. And then once they see that you know what you're doing and that you're getting some good photos, then they become more confident and you end up getting better results.
Yeah. It's all tying into each other. So this is good stuff. So, you know, we're talking about working with a model, and you know, if you don't have the confidence to even interact with a model yet, what options do people have to start? You know, say a listener is really inspired by your book and they want to go out. Obviously, a lot of this is in the book, so it's I'm kind of, you know, it could be a moot point, but you know, for the sake of this interview, what can people do if you want to start trying this? You don't quite have the confidence to you know, go on to Model Mayhem and interact with a model yet. What can people do to actually get started?
Well, I think it's like anything you're uncertain about. You've just got to get in there and do it. I mean, I don't seem to have a problem talking to people and communicating with models. And I think that's because I'm genuinely interested in people. I like to hear their story, you know, find out, you know, are they from Wellington, which is where I live at the moment? Have they moved here from somewhere else? What their background is? And I'm, you know, kind of quite curious and interested in that sort of thing. So really, I suppose it's not that different to kind of meeting someone for the first time, say, in a social situation, and your conversation may go pretty much along these same lines anyway.
So, I mean, obviously, that's another important point. I always say that with any genre of photography, it's really important to find and shoot something that you enjoy doing. So, you know, obviously, you say there that you've got genuinely are interested in people. So, obviously, that's going to make it a lot easier. And maybe someone that is so inherently shy that they can't talk to people is not going to be able to do this as easily. But if the desire is there, say someone wants to do this and they're walking around, maybe more street photography talk, but say if you've gone into a marketplace and you want to make a few portraits of the people that you find there, do you have any advice on how you could approach a total stranger and ask if it's possible to take their photograph?
Now, when it comes to photographing strangers, there was a very interesting article on Digital Photography School a few weeks ago called The 100 Strangers Project, and the author was writing about how he made a project to take 100 photos of strangers. So that is, go up to someone who is a stranger and ask them if they can, he can take their portrait, and so on. And of course, doing something like that naturally builds your skills. Now, I haven't done the sort of thing that you talk about for a long time. I mean, most of the people that I photograph are strangers to me, because they're not my friends. They're people that I've met on Model Mayhem or through somebody else. So in that sense, they are strangers, but they're coming to it already with the idea that they'd like to have some photos taken. But I think the only thing you can do is just ask. Just say, you know, do you mind if I take your photo? This looks really interesting.
That's
the only way. You just have to jump in and do it, and a lot of people I think will say yes. It depends on where you are, you know, because in some places people are more likely to say yes than others. There's places where people love to have their photos taken, there's places where people don't really like it, so it depends on your location. But you know, most people are quite open to that sort of thing, I think.
I remember when I was in India once a number of years ago, and I remember being in a market over in India once, and whereas some people were like throwing themselves at me and saying, you know, take a photo, and others were, no, we'd rather you didn't. And some of it came down to religion, some of it came down to beliefs. I think one person told me that they didn't want me to take, you know, I asked first, but they didn't want me to take a photo of their children because they didn't want to have a photo that could become the one that is displayed at the funeral of the child, you know. And it's like, so they, people think very differently about photographs. So, you're right. The environment that definitely affects the answers that you'll get, but you know, generally, I mean, if you're polite, you're not going to get shouted at, and that's the important thing. You know, if you're polite in how you ask, there's very few people that are going to get instantly aggressive, and I think that those sort of things are what make people apprehensive. It's the thought that you could get turned down, and you know, whether it's politely or not, some people just don't want to get that rejection, and I think you really, having done this a little bit myself, but also having spoken to people over the years, I think that that is something that you can work through. The more you do it, the more you'll find that the percentage of rejections are much fewer than the percentage of okays that you'll get. So I think it's really just a case of, like you say, the 100 Strangers Project. That guy's got 100, I don't know how many times he asked, but he's probably got at least 100 successful interactions there. So it's all the good stuff to help to sort of get out and start doing this. But it is, you're right. I mean, it's not really 100% with regards to what you're talking about in the book. So let's move on. Say you've got your models. What do you do to move them around? I mean, obviously, in your book, you talk about posing people, and I think you mentioned an app that helps with posing and stuff like that. When you're out in the field, how do you work with the person? You know, you're looking at the light and moving them around. Can you give us a bit of advice on that?
Yes, a lot depends on the experience of the person that you're working with. For instance, Wimmy, who has had quite a bit of experience at modeling, she has her own poses, and she will move from one to the other quite smoothly and pause to give you that chance to take a photo. And she's quite experienced, so she does that very naturally. Now, I've photographed other people that haven't had much experience at all, and so they need a lot more direction. So using something like the app I talk about, which I think is called the Posing app, it's just costs a few dollars. It's very, very useful, because I just download it onto my iPhone. You can go through them and pick out in advance the poses that you would like to try, mark them as favorite so it's easy to come up, and then if you get stuck, you can just go to that and have a look and think, oh yes, I will do this one, or I will do that one.
I find it
handy to have something to interact with as such. If you just stand someone in an empty space and ask them to do something, it's very difficult. But if you've got a wall, you can ask them to lean against it with their back, or to face it, or to grab hold of something So having something there that they can lean against or touch is useful as well, because that is easier than just standing in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and you do, you've got a section on that in the book as well, I recall, using the wall. And so, okay.
Yes, there's a whole section on posing, and this set of photos were taken in some old World War II bunkers, which we have here near Wellington. And they are very simple, but they also probably epitomize the type of photo you were talking about earlier, in which they look like they could have been taken with a studio light, but they weren't.
Yeah.
And all it is the model is standing in the doorway. So behind her, it's quite dark because that's inside the bunker.
Yeah.
And so you get a nice dark background. Yeah. And then she's in the shade, but if it's sunny, the sun is bouncing off all the concrete around. So it's almost like a giant reflector coming onto her from the front.
Mm.
And that creates this almost studio type lighting effect. And then because there's a doorway, it's just an easy matter for her to do lots of different poses. Against the doorway, stand in the middle, lean against either side. And you know, with the aid of the posing app and looking, another thing you can do is if you see photos you like somewhere, is just make screenshots of them or download them and put them on your phone or something like that, just so you've got something to refer to.
Yeah, that's all
and
great
then if
advice.
If you get stuck, they're there and you can just go to them.
Yeah, I see that that's, you know, obviously going to be very, very useful. We did something, you know, again, I'm recalling stuff as you talk here. In Namibia last year, we did this, that sort of thing with some of the people that we photographed in a Himba village. We literally asked them to sit in the doorway of their huts. And what that did was, you know, the sun was shining on the other side of the hut. So they were in the shade. There was a lot of light bouncing around outside. So, you know, they were lit nicely, but the inside of the hut was dark, and it would, it turned out to be very beautiful, like all enveloping light, but very, very soft and beautiful. So
yes, it's like having an enormous reflector in front of them, just bouncing all the light onto their face. It's a very beautiful type of light.
Yeah, yeah, great advice. So we, as we mentioned earlier, Model Mayhem. I know that you use Model Mayhem for, you know, to get in touch with a lot of the people that you work with. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. Well, there's a number of websites which allow you to, you know, create a profile as a photographer and say you're looking for models to work with, to collaborate with. But Model Mayhem is my favorite because it allows you to search by geographic location.
Yeah.
All the others that I've found, I could search by New Zealand, but I couldn't narrow it down to the city where I live. So you have to wade through all the profiles that come up to find people that are close to you. And it's good because, I mean, we were talking about photographing strangers before, but the difficulty with that, or the chief difficulty, is that perhaps a large number of the people that you approach may have no interest at all in posing for photos. Yeah. But if they've got their profile on Model Mayhem, then they must have an interest in it. So it's a good place to find people that you would otherwise never meet.
Yeah, yeah, perfect. I think it's, you know, there's obviously, when I started to think about what we would talk about, I was thinking also of portraiture as in the street photography. But yeah, I mean, this, it's really a different thing. And so if you get someone that, even if they are a stranger, then they're already there to have their portrait made. So, you know, it's, I guess it's a very different dynamic.
Yes. I mean, also here in New Zealand, I guess the kind of people you see walking around in the street are not nearly as interesting as they would be if you live somewhere like, or if you're traveling to somewhere like Asia or India or even South America, when you get out into the, yeah, the Andes and all the indigenous people there. So for me, I don't really have much interest in street photography as such, not here anyway. If I was traveling somewhere a bit more exotic, I would. So here, yeah, this is a style of photography that suits me very much.
Yeah, I can I certainly relate to that. You know, even with me being in Japan, which is a place that a lot of people, you know, people email me asking me if I can do street photography workshops for them and that. But for me, it's difficult because this is home. I've lived here longer than, almost as long as I lived in England, and definitely most of my adult life. So it's not quite the same. But as soon as I go to somewhere like Africa or India, then I start to do much more street photography. So I definitely relate to what you're saying. And you know, I mean, people obviously, if you've got an interest in street photography, I'm definitely not saying that you can't do it close to home, because a lot of people are doing great work like that. Yeah, but it's all about what you, as you said, interest. If you're not, if it doesn't interest you to do that, then you're not going to do it. You know, you don't have to do it just because it's a popular genre.
That's right. I think another advantage of taking photos of models in this way is that you have more time. If you're taking photos of someone in the street, you may just have a few seconds or a couple of minutes to work with them. But with this, you can go to somewhere and you can spend an hour or 2 hours shooting, and kind of ideas evolve, and you know, you get better pictures, more good pictures at the end of the session than you do at the beginning of the session. So it's a good way to get results.
Yeah, I'm with you. So have you had any bad experiences with Model Mayhem? Obviously, you've had some great ones. We see the results, but have you ever had anyone turn up that didn't work out?
No. I mean, I think the biggest problem with something like Model Mayhem is getting in contact with people that don't reply or say they're interested, and then you email them back and ask about arranging a shoot, and then they don't reply again, and you know, things like that, which is just, you know, anything that's going to happen whenever you're dealing with people anyway. So it doesn't, you know, matter how you get in contact with them. Because the people put, or the models put their own photos on the website, so you pretty much know what they're going to look like before they turn up. So if you don't think someone's going to be suitable, then you just wouldn't approach them in the first place. So no, I haven't had anything bad like that.
Okay, that's good.
No, on the whole, it's been very positive.
That's good to know. So in the book, you give some excellent examples of easy to follow explanations of how to retouch portraits in Lightroom. And you know, a lot of the time you go around the web and you see these graphic tiles with ads for like software that pretty much does it all for you. Have you ever used that kind of plugin, or do you generally just use Lightroom? How do you go about that?
Well, I tried a lot of them, because most of them you can download as a trial version and see if they work for you. I tried a lot. The one that was my favorite was also one of the least expensive as well. It was called Perfect Portrait 2, which is by On One Software. At the time, you could buy it by itself, but now you can only buy it as part of Perfect Photo Suite 8, so it costs a little bit more money, although it's still not incredibly expensive, and you get all the other software with it. But to be honest, I don't think there's much you can do in these programs that you can't do in Lightroom, because the skin smoothing preset in Lightroom works very well. You just use the adjustment brush, paint in where you want it to go. That will be too strong, and then you just fade it back to, you know, the setting which looks good, and that does it. So between that and the spot healing brush to get rid of blemishes, I don't think you need other software, to be honest. This is the conclusion I've come to. And this style of photography, I mean, not only is you using natural light, but you're trying to, or I'm trying to, find the natural beauty of the model as well. So you know, as I was researching this part of the book and looking at photos in magazines a lot more closely than I normally would, and on billboards and posters and photos in shops and all that sort of thing, I realized that, you know, in the commercial world, skin smoothing software, or perhaps skin smoothing in Photoshop, however those photographers have done it, is a very big thing. You know, they do it to female models, they do it to male models, they do it a lot, even when, you know, it seems that they don't need to, and they usually go overboard with it as well. Movie posters are the worst for that. I mean, they are so heavily retouched, they are always, you know, hardly photos anymore, some of them. They're more like paintings. And yeah, you know, unless that's something you really want to do because that's your particular style, I don't think it's necessary. It's certainly not part of my style. And again, I think it's probably one of the more intimidating aspects of portrait photography, perhaps, is that maybe some people feel that not only do they have to get, perhaps use professional models, which is not necessary, use portable flash, again, it's not really necessary. And then by the time they've done all that, they then need to go home and learn how to do complex retouching in Photoshop or use skin smoothing software. Well, you don't really need to do that either. Lightroom gives you all the tools that you need. And for 99% of what people want, that's going to be fine.
Yeah, yeah. I know that I've spoken to people. I mean, there's always a big dilemma on, you mentioned earlier about removing blemishes. I know people that have, you know, like, for example, a good friend has a largest mole on her face. And she said once that she had a portrait shot, and when they came back, the mole had been removed. And she wasn't happy because, like, the mole is her. You know, it's like, why remove that and not even ask? So I think that you have to be careful with retouching as well, especially if you're photographing someone for them. You know, I mean, again, not quite what we're talking about here, where you're creating artistic images of a model for both yourself and the model's sake. But if you're doing this, you're being paid by a family to do family portraits, then you definitely need to be more careful with what you do as well. And if in doubt, ask rather than just go ahead and remove stuff, because they, you know, people all view how they look differently and don't necessarily want to look like a Hollywood model.
That's right. Now, one of my models told me a story. She's had lots of photos taken by different photographers around Wellington. And one of them, who has a background in digital design or digital retouching, he works for Weta, which is Peter Jackson's movie company, which is based here. So they have a lot of special effects people working there. And this is what he does in his spare time. She said he retouched a photo so heavily, he even changed the shape of her face and made her eyes look bigger. And she actually emailed him back after receiving the photos and asked for the unretouched photos, because those photos weren't her. They were like photos of somebody else. And, you know, faces are so distinctive that I think it's easy to, I mean, it's hard to say where the line is, but it's easy to go too far and create something, you know, which is not a portrait of that person. It doesn't represent them. And it's almost as if we're saying, well, this is the ideal standard of beauty and you don't match it, so I'm just going to make your eyes a little bigger and smooth your skin and do this and do that until you match the ideal version of beauty which I have. And that is kind of insulting, and in a way, I know that people who do that, their intentions are good, but, you know, it's moving away from capturing someone's likeness or character.
I agree. Okay, so if we I know that we've already touched on a lot of things, a lot of tips and advice, but could you give us one of those corny little five tips for photographers wanting to start shooting portraits sort of things?
Yes, this sounds like an article for someone's blog, doesn't it? Five tips for taking portraits.
Exactly.
But yes, we can do that. Now, the first one, now part of the book, the idea behind the book is that you probably don't need to buy any extra gear to put most of the stuff into action that's in the book. If you have just a camera with a kit lens, an 18 to 55 millimeter kit lens, that gives you most of the tools that you need to take these types of photos. But one thing which I do think is invaluable is a prime lens. And I use an 85 millimeter lens on my 5D Mark II, and you don't need the expensive 1.2 unless you really want it as well. I use the 1.8 or a 50 millimeter lens on a crop sensor camera, because these are very good portrait lenses, and I think having one focal length works perfectly for me. I often go with just my 85 millimeter lens on a shoot, because you don't have to make decisions about focal length. That's already been decided for you. You just move back and forth depending on how much of the person you want in the photo. And then you can go to f2.8 or f1.8 and really take advantage of that shallow depth of field. And that's really nice to do as well.
That
would be tip number one.
Okay.
Tip number two, get your model in the shade.
Okay.
I'm surprised at how many people, models and photographers included, I mean, I realize the models are probably not going to appreciate the subtleties of lighting, but I'm surprised how many photographers think that you need to put someone in the sun to take a good photo of them, and it's the opposite. Just get them in the shade where the quality of the light is really nice, and then, you know, work with that and try and get them somewhere where the sun isn't shining on the background, so you don't have bright highlights in the background either.
Good stuff.
So I think that's important. shoot at the end of the day. Mm. That would be my third tip. I mean, and this is something which you may have to communicate to your models, especially in the summer when the days are long. And so that means trying to arrange a shoot at maybe 7 p.m. or 8 p.m. or something like that.
Mm.
So you have to explain that that's when the light is going to be best. Everything's going to be at its most beautiful. The sun will be setting and you know, the quality of the light is going to be fantastic. And it is at that time. It's just so worth the effort to get there at that time, you know, especially on a nice sunny day, that you know your models will thank you for it when they see the photos as well. Once they see the results, they buy into it as well. It just may take a little bit of convincing if they think that you know, they don't realize that there's a good reason for doing that.
Good stuff.
Get a good background.
Yeah, okay.
That would be tip number four. So what I do is, like, when I'm out and about as well, is I kind of keep a mental list of places where it would be nice to take some portrait photos. So if I'm out somewhere and I think, oh, this might make a good location, I go and have a look at it and kind of make a note. And, you know, it's all about just finding places which are going to look nice in your photos, so you can bring your model there and put them there. If you've got nice light, pretty model and a nice background, then, you know, it makes everything a lot easier.
Okay, what's and, number five?
Well, we've already touched on this. It's just communicate with your model, build that rapport and talk and take an interest in your model and ask about their life and you know, put them at ease, be confident and you know, be decisive when you're taking the photos and just, I suppose it's a kind of quite an unselfish approach. You're really, you're making them the center of the shoot, which they are really.
Mm.
And yeah, just making them feel like the center of your attention for a little while. And yeah, that's what creates good photos.
Yeah. That's all great advice. So I think there's a lot of good takeaways here, especially for someone that is interested, but maybe not quite, you know, actually going out and doing a lot of this yet. But again, you know, the book is available on Craft and Vision, and I'll put some links and a lot of the information, just at least the keywords to what we've touched on here today, over on the blog. So people can go take a look at that, and we'll have an image in there as well. So, you know, it's worth going over, taking a quick look at the blog, and that will be at mbp.ac/405 for episode 405. And obviously, there'll be links there to take you over to actually pick up the book as well. But where can people, obviously, you've got your own profile page on Craft and Vision, but where can people go to find you online, Andrew?
Well, the best place is at my website, which is andrewsgibson.com. There's no dashes or anything. It's just straight Andrew S. Gibson. Because that has links to my Facebook page, Flickr, 500px, and that sort of thing. So anything else that people want to find, the information's there on my website.
Excellent. Well, once again, congratulations on a beautiful book. It's a big book, so it's not one of the normal $5 ones. It's a $20 one, and probably the discount will have expired by the time we release this. But it's one of the most beautiful books on portraiture that I've seen. So, you know, to say that you did it all with natural light is a testament to what you're actually talking about in the book. So congratulations on that, Andrew.
Yes, thank you. We should probably mention as well the other photographers whose work appeared in the book, because the case studies that I carried out are a big part of what makes the book what it is.
Sure.
So maybe a good idea to add their links to your blog post, because they have some really beautiful work, and you'd learn a lot just by going and having a look at their websites and reading their stuff and looking at what they do. It's all quite amazing, really.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, that's all in the book. So although it's definitely worth mentioning and crediting them, let's let people buy the book and pick those up.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, well, really, thanks a lot. Thanks for your time today, Andrew, and it's always a pleasure speaking with you, and we'll hopefully do it again before too long.
Okay, no, thank you, Martin. It's been great.
Okay, so just to let you know, I just checked after speaking with Andrew, and the discount that we mentioned is going to be available for about one day after this podcast goes live. So I'm not going to mention it in the podcast notes, on the blog. But if you listen to this before January 21st, and that will be 11:59 PST, January 21st, then you can get a $5 discount. So you get the book for $15 instead of $20. And you need to use the code NATPORTRAIT15. So NATPORTRAIT15. And that'll give you a $5 discount off the book. So I enjoyed talking with Andrew there, and I hope that you found that useful as well. Thanks very much for listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google+, Twitter, Facebook, etc. And links to everything that I'm up to are at martinbaileyphotography.com. So do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode. But in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you do. Bye-bye.